Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hey, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. So glad you're with me today for this latest installment of our series, Bonding with James. Now, in the last episode, we began to talk about the death of James. So I just want to take you back to what we looked at. This is the only first century source that we have for the death of James, and it comes to us from the Jewish writer Josephus and his Antiquities of the Jews. And so now here's what he says. He's talking about Ananus, who was the high priest at the time, took advantage of the fact that there was no Roman governor in the region for a little while to have James executed. So here's what Josephus says. He says, the younger Ananus, who, as we have said, had been appointed to the high priesthood, was rash in his temper and unusually daring. He followed the school of the Sadducees, who are indeed more savage than any of the other Jews, as I have already explained, when they sit in judgment. Possessed of such a character, Ananus thought that he had a favorable opportunity because Festus was dead and Albinus was still on the way. So again, we dealt with this last time. There's no love lost between Josephus and the Sadducees, who were, of course, in charge of the high priesthood at the time, just as they were in the days of Jesus. Now, let's continue on here. So he convened the judges of the Sanhedrin and brought before them a man named James, the brother of Jesus, the so-called Christ. So it's really important that to note that Josephus calls him the so-called Christ. He doesn't believe that Jesus is the Messiah. That's what Christ means. It means Messiah. And this idea of James being the brother of Jesus, again, he's not another son of Mary, but I do believe he is a relative of Jesus. He's referred to as the brother of Jesus in the New Testament by Paul. Again, not a son of Mary, but I do think he is related. Not to belabor the point, but I pretty much have to say that every episode in case somebody's tuning in for the first time. So he says, a certain others were also brought before the Sanhedrin, and Ananus accused them, according to Josephus, of having transgressed the law and delivered them up to be stoned. Those of the inhabitants of the city who were considered to be the most fair-minded and who were strict in observance of the law were offended at this. They therefore secretly sent to King Agrippa, urging him, for Ananus had not even been correct in his first step of convening the Sanhedrin without Albinus's permission, to order him to desist from any further such actions. Certain of them even went to meet Albinus, who was on his way from Alexandria, and informed him that Ananus had no authority to convene the Sanhedrin without his consent. Convinced by these words, Albinus angrily wrote to Ananus, threatening to take vengeance upon him. King Agrippa, because of Ananus's action, deposed him from the high priesthood, which he held for 3 months. So again, as I mentioned in the last episode, and I'd actually forgotten to mention that when Josephus was captured by General Vespasian during the Jewish war with Rome, he saved his skin by saying, "Hey, Vespasian, I believe that you are going to be crowned emperor." Well, I forgot to tell you that that actually did happen. Vespasian did become the emperor, which made Josephus look even better. And so Vespasian saved his life, and he kind of had this aristocratic position, and he began to refer to himself as Flavius Josephus. He took a Roman name to add to his Jewish name. And this was one of the times in his writings that he wrote about Jesus with reference to James. And there's no question here that this is a historical account here. He's not trying to prove anything. He says Jesus is the so-called Christ. He doesn't believe he's the Messiah, but he's not trying to grind an axe here. He's just kind of stating this in passing, that James was killed along with some others. So the other place that Josephus talks about Jesus is in the famous, what's known as the Testimonium Flavianum, and that is, of course, in Latin, the testimony of Flavius Josephus. Now, again, he was not a Christian, didn't believe in Jesus, but this is the other place where Josephus wrote about Jesus, and this is in the Antiquities, Book 18. So let me just read this to you. Now, what's happened is throughout time, Christians got a hold of this text and they added some stuff to it. They doctored it a little bit, just like Martin Luther doctored the book of Romans. Well, they added a few things here and there, but it's easy to see what Christians added later in what Josephus originally wrote. So I'm going to explain this to you. So I'm just going to read the passage as it stands now with the Christian additions to it. This is Josephus here. About this time, there lived Jesus, a wise man, if indeed one ought to call him a man. For he wrought surprising feats. He was the Christ. When Pilate condemned him to be crucified, those who had come to love him did not give up their affection for him. On the third day, he appeared restored to life, and the tribe of Christians has not disappeared. Okay, so the parts that Josephus did not write for sure are this idea of, hey, about this time there lived Jesus, a wise man. Yeah, Josephus wrote that. But then the next part, if indeed one ought to call him a man, you know, he's more than a man. Josephus did not write that. That was added later. Josephus did not believe that Jesus was the God-man. Josephus did say, for Jesus wrought surprising feats. Or in another translation, he was a doer of wondrous deeds. That's basically saying that Jesus was known as a miracle worker. And nobody denies that. That's a rock-solid, bedrock part of the Jesus tradition, that even Jesus' enemies and other enemies of Jesus wrote similar types of things throughout history, that he was well known as a miracle worker, that Jesus did miracles. I don't think anybody can deny. They would argue about the source of that. Some said, oh, his enemies his miracles come from the dark side. It's not from God. But nobody denies that Jesus did miracles. So this statement of Josephus, he was the Christ, there's no way he said that. Josephus did not say that Jesus was the Messiah. Now, he did say this, when Pilate condemned him to be crucified, those who had come to love him did not give up their affection for him. So he's basically saying that, yes, when Pilate had Jesus crucified, his followers did not go away. They remained, and this is because of the resurrection. Now, in the text that we have today, Josephus says, on the third day he appeared restored to life. No, he never wrote that. That was added by later Christians. Josephus does not believe in the resurrection. But he probably did say this, and the tribe of Christians has not disappeared. So, okay, let me read it to you without the Christian additions to the text, and it'll make, I think, very solid sense of what Josephus originally wrote. So he probably wrote something like this. About this time, there lived Jesus, a wise man, for he wrought surprising feats, or he was a doer of marvelous deeds. When Pilate condemned him to be crucified, those who had come to love him did not give up their affection for him, and the tribe of Christians has not disappeared. Okay, that's in all likelihood what Josephus actually did write. And we actually know this for sure now, because guess what? Archaeology has turned up another copy of Josephus's Antiquities that is in Arabic. It's an Arabic version of the Antiquities, and the Arabic version does not have the Christian additions to the text to make it sound as if Josephus believed in Jesus. So we can really reconstruct what Josephus actually says, and what he says corroborates a lot of what we know from the New Testament's portrayal of Jesus, that he claimed to be the Messiah, that he was a wise teacher who performed surprising feats, miraculous deeds, and his followers continued to be his disciples in a movement that continued despite the fact that he was crucified. Now, we would say it continued because of the resurrection, but Josephus doesn't talk about that. So he's a really, really important historical writer. It really fills in a lot that we know about the period and is another witness historically to Jesus. There are many of them, many writers about Jesus outside of the scriptures. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. So let's get back now to the death of James. One of the things that Josephus says when he does talk about in Book 20 of the Antiquities, the death of James, he again mentions that James was really faithful to the Torah. He really was faithful to the Old Testament traditions, including the ceremonial works of the law, the dietary works of the law, the kosher food laws, that he didn't have to obey as a Christian, but he chose to keep doing it because of the fact that his fellow Jews would never have believed him when he was talking about Jesus as Messiah if he wasn't faithful to those traditions. So again, James was focusing on his fellow Jews, trying to convince them to accept Jesus as the Messiah. There was this big pocket, and there are thousands. James says in the Acts of the Apostles that there are thousands of Jews who believed in Jesus in the early days. So these Jewish Catholics, if you will, these Hebrew Catholics, there were quite a number of them. Now, the other thing Josephus says is that leading men of the city, and by that he means, you know, pious Jews who were really, really into their faith, even though they didn't agree with James that Jesus was the Messiah, they were really, really angry about the way he was killed. They were sick about it, just as with the death of Jesus. The same exact thing was going on, because Joseph of Arimathea, you'll remember this guy, he's mentioned in all four of the Gospels. He was a very member of the Sanhedrin, the highest Jewish court that condemned Jesus to death. But as the New Testament explains, he was not there during this hastily arranged kangaroo court procedure that was basically illegal, that condemned Jesus to death by night. And so he was just absolutely torn up about this, the injustice of it all. And he donates his family tomb for Jesus to have a proper burial in. And so, again, no Christian would make this up, this idea that Jesus' disciples didn't arrange for a proper burial place, but this guy did, a member of the Sanhedrin. So it's potentially embarrassing for the early church. It's the criterion of embarrassment. We can take that to the bank, that that really happened. And so in the same way, leading Jewish citizens, even though they didn't agree with James, they had a huge respect for him, his piety. And again, James, there's a later legend about James that says that his knees were as thick and as calloused as those of a camel because he prayed so much. And James was stoned to death. James was stoned to death. And there's, again, a bit of a competing tradition in the literature about exactly how this happened. In some places it says he was stoned. In other places that he was thrown off of a rooftop of one of the temple buildings in Jerusalem. Well, actually, both can be true. Both can be true. And this is, generally speaking, how when the Jews did execute someone for blasphemy, very often they would throw them off of a high place or push them off of a high place and then stone them. You know, if the fall didn't kill them, the rocks would. They tried to do this to Jesus. Don't forget, in Luke chapter 4, Jesus is preaching in his hometown of Nazareth. Starts off pretty well. Wow, where'd this guy get this wisdom? We've known this guy since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. Wow, listen to these eloquent words. Could this really be the carpenter, right? We know his mother. How is this possible? Well, very, very soon the mood changes because Jesus starts basically saying some things that they don't like, and human nature being as fickle as it is, they go from being quite fond of the homily to wanting to kill him, and they attempt to throw him off the hill, the brow of the hill upon which their town is built. And if you've been to Nazareth, and I have in Israel, you'll see this hill, and this is probably the one that Jesus was, they tried to throw him off, but somehow miraculously, he just kind of slips through the crowd and he's on his way. He gets out of the jam. So in all likelihood with James, probably that's what happened to him. They probably did throw him off of the roof, of push him off the roof of one of the temple complex buildings in Jerusalem, and then, to add insult, to add death to injury, stone him until he passes into eternity. And so this is, again, exactly the mode of what happened to Jesus. And the high priesthood was passed on in a family lineage during that time, from father to son. And that's why Josephus talks about this guy, Annas Jr., the younger Annas. His dad was also the high priest. Caiaphas, who was the high priest when Jesus was executed, he handed him over to the Romans. Same thing. It was a family affair. And so his father-in-law had been high priest before that. So The bottom line is this definitely coheres with what we know from the history of the time. You're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. And so, this is it. This is the death of James. Now we need to talk about his burial. And this is, again, where the ossuary of James, the bone box, comes in. And if you've seen the social media images for this series, Bonding with James, on Twitter or Facebook, there is an image of the James ossuary. And you can look it up, too. You can just Google the James ossuary, O-S-S-U-A-R-Y, ossuary. And so what it is it's a stone, limestone, in this case, bone box. So the fact that we have this, and I do think it's authentic, I really do, and we talked about this in one of the first episodes of the series, this does shed some more light, the ossuary, on his death and on his burial. It was discovered, the ossuary was discovered very, very close to the old city of David. And if you've been to Jerusalem on a Holy Land tour, maybe you can come with me one day, you'll see the city of David, which has been unearthed by archaeologists, some of the old complex, the government complex buildings that David had downtown, if you will. And very close to there, very close to the city of David, there are ancient Jewish tombs. And that's where they found the ossuary of James. And that's kind of interesting, too. And Witherington points this out, that he wasn't buried in a Christian cemetery, per se. He was buried among his fellow Jews. And he thought that Jesus was the Messiah for the Jews and for the Gentiles as well. A lot of his fellow Jews disagreed with him, but they did respect him, and he loved his people. He loved his people. And so he was buried with his fellow Jews, but he wasn't buried in a family tomb. And that's the way things were in those times. There would be a tomb that would be for all members of the family. Now, if that was the case for James, he would have been buried in Nazareth, where his family came from. Again, he's a relative of Jesus, probably hails from Nazareth as well. But that's not where his body was buried. It wasn't taken back there. And so he had a unique burial place, not like some other tombs that we've discovered. And one of the things that I did in Israel during my grad studies was I got to do a lot of exploring of first century Jewish tombs. It was very much like Indiana Jones type stuff. And I saw the tomb of Caiaphas the high priest and his family. And in that tomb, they discovered, and this was in the year 1990, they discovered the ossuary, the bone box of Caiaphas. And if you go to the Israel Museum in Jerusalem, there's an incredible exhibit about Jesus of Nazareth. They found some artifacts related to Jesus. And you can see three items right next to each other. Number one is Caiaphas's ossuary, his bone box. And this thing is just beautiful. And again, you can Google images of this. It's very ornate. There are some rosettes on it. It's just really, really well done, which you would kind of expect because he was the high priest. So in his tomb, and I've been there, by the way, where is his tomb located, his family tomb? In Akeldama, in the Valley of Gehenna, which is literally, quite literally, the place that Jesus used as a metaphor for hell. So I've been down there. I've been down to the Valley of Gehenna. I guess you could say I've been to hell and back. But I saw the family tomb of Caiaphas. That's where they found the ossuary. And there was a niche in the wall for each family member, and their ossuary would eventually be put in that niche for their final resting place. And again, what happened with the Jews was that when in the first century, the burial traditions at the time, when someone died, their body would be anointed with spices, wrapped in linen, all that stuff, just like what was done for Jesus, laid on a stone slab in a tomb, exactly what was done for Jesus. There'd be a period of mourning where people could visit the tomb and continue to anoint and pray. And that's what the women were trying to do on Easter Sunday morning, trying to come to the tomb. And there was a place, there was a standing area where people could pray in front of the body of the deceased for a period of time, for about a week or so, and then the tomb would be sealed up for good. Opened again a year later, and this would be the secondary burial. By this time, the flesh is decomposed, and then the bones are collected and placed in this stone bone box, the ossuary. And then they would put the ossuary in a niche in the wall in the crypt, and that would be the final resting place of the individual. And again, we mentioned this before, that when this man comes to Jesus, wants to follow him in the gospel, and Jesus says, "Follow me," and the guy says, "Yeah, I will, but first let me bury my father." And Jesus says, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. He's not being cruel to the man. The man's father is not dying. He's not saying, don't be at your dying father's bedside. No, no, no. What's going on here is secondary burial. He's been dead for about a year, and they're getting ready to collect the bones, open up the tomb, collect the bones, and put them in the ossuary. And Jesus says, basically, look, he's already dead. That part is not as important right now. You've got to follow me. The message of the kingdom can't wait. And so that passage has often been misunderstood. Now, back to Caiaphas for a second. The family tomb of Caiaphas in Gehenna, the Valley of Gehenna, right outside of his family tomb, there's the remnants of a tree. And sometimes when you go there, tour guides will say, oh, by the way, see that tree over there? Yeah, that tree, that's the tree that Judas hung himself on. Well, they don't know that. There's no way they could, I mean, maybe. There's no way they could possibly say that. But it is possible. I will grant that it is possible. And if Judas did hang himself there, the reason why he would have done it there, right in front of Caiaphas' family tomb, is because by committing suicide there, he would have basically desecrated the place. He would have desecrated the family tomb of Caiaphas as a last show of contempt for him and what he did to Jesus. But we'll never know. I guess we'll find out in heaven, God willing. But having said that, I'm not saying Judas made it to heaven. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not going to get into that one today, but maybe on another episode of The Faith Explained. Now, what's interesting when you compare by the way, the other things in the Jesus of Nazareth exhibit in the Israel Museum, there's the ossuary, the bone box of Caiaphas the high priest. There's also the famous Pontius Pilate stone slab. It's an inscription that basically proves the historical existence of Pontius Pilate, because a lot of people said that he didn't really exist either. They said Jesus never existed, Caiaphas never existed, Pontius Pilate's not a real historical figure. Hogwash. We have physical historical evidence for Pilate. We've got tons of evidence for the existence of Jesus, including the writings of Josephus, which I talked about earlier. And so this Pontius Pilate stone, which was discovered in the 1960s, in Caesarea Maritima, proves that he was actually gives his actual rank. He was a prefect, not a procurator. But there's an inscription basically in thanksgiving to Pontius Pilate for some cool stuff he did for the people. And so there it is, written in stone. And some guys found it. Some archaeologists found it in the theater in Caesarea Maritima, this great, incredible city that Herod the Great built. They were walking on the steps of the theater, and one of the steps gave way under their feet. And they said, oh, that's kind of interesting. It's a loose stone. Let's just flip it over just in case there's something historical of note there. And that's when they found this inscription. It was incredible. What a providential find that was. And so the third item that's there in the Jesus of Nazareth exhibit was the heel bone of a crucified man who was probably about 27 years old. He was crucified under the reign of Pontius Pilate, just as Jesus was. So this was proof that crucifixion victims could get a proper burial, not an honorable burial, because of course they would have been condemned criminals according to the law, but they would have gotten a proper burial. There are many who said that Jesus was never properly buried, much less resurrected. Well, this put an end to that kind of discussion. So what's interesting is that when you look at the Caiaphas ossuary, the inscription, you know, who does this bone box belong to, would have been written on the end of the bone box, because that's the way they were shoved into the niches. They were kind of slid into the niche in the wall of the tomb, and you could read the end of the box, oh, this is whose bone box it really is. But when you look at the James ossuary, the name is actually written on the side of the ossuary, which is really interesting. Why would it be written on the side? Well, we're not 100% sure, but it's possible that, it was never going to be anybody else buried in this particular tomb, and they definitely wanted people to know that who this ossuary belonged to, this idea that James was going to be venerated as a saint after his death. But the other interesting thing about it is that James's ossuary, it's pretty short. It's only long enough to contain the longest bone in the body, which is, of course, the femur, one of the leg bones. I don't want to be too gruesome here, but when they reburied somebody, they would take the skeleton apart so that they could fit it into the ossuary, the bone box. But it's got to be at least as long as the longest bone in your body. Now, why did they do this? You might be asking yourself, why did the Jews bother doing the secondary burial, putting the bones in the bone box. Well, the actual reason, it might sound corny, but it's actually a good reason. It's a good theological reason. They believed in the resurrection of the body. And basically, hey, we're trying to make things easier for God to put you back together on the last day, at the end of the world, at the renewal of all things, the resurrection of the body. Hey, we're just trying to help out a little bit. But it's great. It really does show the strong belief in resurrection, bodily resurrection. They knew, of course, that Jesus himself had already been raised from the sleep of death. He had already been resurrected. So, of course, James and all the early church believers would have been expecting the exact same thing for James. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, St. Paul says that Jesus was the first fruits of those who be raised from the dead. So all believers, including us today, are looking forward to this. We believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting, as we say in the Creed. And so this is it. And James had a very simple ossuary, no great decorations on it, because it was very simple. He wanted to give all the glory to God, all the glory to Jesus. That's why he doesn't say, hey, I'm the Bishop of Jerusalem on the ossuary. It just says, James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus. And so we'll talk about the son of Joseph part another time, but don't worry, he is not a son of Mary. I have to keep saying that. But thanks for joining me today on The Faith Explained as we talked about, finished off the piece on the death and burial of James. And in the next episode, we're going to look at some James the legend. What happens next? People wrote about James long after his death. Some of the stuff is corny. It's not real history, but some of it might be true. And we'll talk about that in the next episode of The Faith Explained. If you've missed one, you can go to the website, relevantradio.com. You can see several of the series that we've done, download the episodes, share them with a friend, check out the podcast. You can do that on the Relevant Radio app. And also wherever you get your podcast, you can email the program, faith@relevantradio.com. Your questions, your comments are always welcome. You can follow me on Twitter, @CaleClark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And there's a Faith Explained account too, @FaithExplained. And don't forget, join me later today for the Cale Clark Show, 5 p.m. Central, right here on Relevant Radio. Father Simon Says is coming up next. We'll see you next time. God bless you.